Hey everybody, it's Blake.
And this is Drew.
And you're listening to the Lock, Stock, and Two Smoking Controllers podcast.
Welcome to episode 118 of the podcast. We're going to move right on into this as quickly as we can, so we can get to the game, the meat, the goodness of the podcast, if you agree, maybe. But real quick, I'm going to burn through the social media preamble. So you can find us on all the social media platforms just by searching the podcast name. That's where you keep track of the comings and going of the podcast. Mostly, it's just posts right now about when we go live on Twitch. So people will come hang out on their Twitch and watch our Twitch streams with our cousin slash podcast editor, Brian. You watch those, and eventually we do a podcast with him about those games that we play.
You got one of those coming up, actually.
You got one of those coming up. We're at 118.
To be...
Well, 120 is something else, and 125 will be...
Oh, yeah. Sorry. I did math wrong.
Yeah, you got it all wrong. We just did one.
It's going to...
And 115 was... We did... What was the game?
I know that, Anthem. Like the back of my head. Yeah, totally, it was Anthem.
So we just did the podcast for Anthem. We're not, it won't be our next podcast, but the current game we're playing with Brian is Dark Souls 2. If you can watch us slowly work our way through that. We feel like we make okay progress some nights and other nights, you know, typical Dark Souls fashion. You just kind of get running in circles and not getting anywhere. And the thing about how we're playing is, since there's three of us, we got to run through every area and fight every boss three times to progress, so it's interesting watching how differently that goes each time we do it. We beat a boss of the night with one go on Blake, and then it continued to kill me two or three times. Actually, the only time I survived the boss fight was the time we won in my game. I managed to die every time. Well, Blake beat it in one try. I died three times on my attempt, eventually survived mine, and then when we did Brian's, they beat Brian's in one attempt, I still died. So I've only actually survived that boss one time. Really irritating.
Was that the smelter, or was that the...
That's the smelter demon.
Okay. But we did a fight after that that still kind of struggled too, that lava demon.
Yeah, but that's what we're doing now, Dark Souls 2. I think any Dark Souls games are always fun to watch just about anybody play, unless they're annoying, and I don't think we're annoying. I think we're just great at video games.
We just struggle and sometimes get really pissed.
Sometimes. So we also have a store and a Patreon page. The store has all the normal stuff that people have, t-shirts and cups and hats and bags and gigantic mouse pads, apparently, like desk pads, I guess you would call them. They're huge. Blake's got one for his work computer, like all that kind of cool stuff. And I got the Patreon page, of course, which is, those are just, well, the money for that and this would, for Patreon, would be to support the making of the podcast, which mostly just involves giving money to Devious when we want new art for something, whenever we have a new guest or want art or anything like that. So money goes to him. So we appreciate anybody who wants to get on the Patreon. If you're on there and you see, obviously if you listen to the podcast, you know we have big dumb names for the episodes. If you're on Patreon, we would give you a heads up for the upcoming game. Of course, you would get the episode early anyway, and then you would give you a chance to, if you wanted to, submit a name for the episode for the full release, which we will pretty much use anything anybody gives us, mm-hmm. as long as it's long and dumb. So links to all of that stuff can be found in the show notes, because a lot of that stuff is long to type out. Our name makes any kind of link really long. So finding us in general just takes typing out a whole long thing. So just click on one of the links and just follow us there, and come to our Twitch streams. That's the thing we want to do the most. We try to do them on Wednesdays when we can. It's just, we just kind of balance out all our base lives and try to set to a certain day. So we try to every Wednesday night. But if you just follow us on twitch.tv/twosmokingcontrollers, you will of course get notified whenever we go live. Mm-hmm. And with that said, I'm going to hand the reins over to Blake's, because if you listen to the podcast, the loose format we follow. He's going to start telling you about the game, and you should already know the name of the game if you listened to last episode, but Blake's going to tell you again.
The game we're talking about today is Signalis. hope I pronounced that right, because they don't really say it, but that's how it's spelled. Signalis.
There's no voice acting, is there?
Mm-mm, not for, as far as I can tell. It's Signalis. Now, it came out on everything October 27th, 2022. And it is a top-down 2.5D pixel survival horror game.
Yeah. I said I wrote, like, third-person survival horror. Put high-quality pixel graphics, sort of like mid to late PlayStation 1.
Like yeah, that's era, actually like, where they drew the some inspiration from. It says from PlayStation 1 specifically.
PlayStation 1 era, like, yeah. The anime art character, they have anime, kind of an anime art style, but they look like the bodies and the like all that everything else about the world is done in like a PS1 pixels. Looks really cool. That's why we would have played. Besides it, like leaving Game Pass, whatever, the look of the game probably got lots of people to play it, including us.
Oh, yeah. It is developed by a company, Rose Engine. It's just two people. Their names are Yuri Stern and Barbara Whitman. They are two illustrators and game designers, and they're based out of Hamburg, Germany. And they have been working as a company since 2014. As of right now, this is the only game they've put out, but they are very new to it. The original part of their game was their thesis project for their bachelor's degree from graduating college.
That's cool.
And it says that the game itself has gone through many iterations because it was originally a 2D side scroller.
Mm-hmm.
And they that's the
what's interesting about that. If this was a 2D side scroller, we would even played it.
No, probably no. But the 2D side scroller is what they turned in as part of their thesis. As part of their thesis paperwork to get it, you know, for their final grade whatever. And then it gradually evolved afterward into the top-down, third-person survival horror experience with low-poly 3D models and 2D sprites to create a fluid animation blended between a pixel-perfect look. That was what they had.
The game looks cool.
Yeah, it looks really cool.
Yeah, the game just looks cool.
What kind of a cool thing is the game is published by Humble Games. They're all about helping. You get Humble Bundles, and they're all about all
their indie developers.
Mm-hmm. But thanks to them, both members of Rose Engine were actually able to develop Signalis full time from their home in 2020. Like they were focused fully on it. And put the game out in a reasonable amount of time afterward. But they already had like a base structure, you know. And it's just the two of them. Now they did have musical help, composery help from two individuals, Thousand Eyes and Cicada Sirens. And the music itself is it's not bad. It's ambient. It's foreboding. It's dark.
Mm-hmm.
You got. I think it just involves the individuals because some stuff is like piano and string, and the other one seems a little more bassy and electronic-y.
Mm-hmm.
And they both there are songs because the entire album is on Spotify, and they've actually released vinyl versions of the soundtrack. And for the most part, they're separate, and there's a few songs where they actually collab together on, and those ones tend to be like some bigger moments in the game.
Yeah, I don't remember. It's been a while since we played. I don't really remember.
The music's not bad, but it's, like I said, it's just dark, foreboding, and ethereal, I guess, considering everything. But one cool thing is in 21, before the game itself came out, but it was announced that it was part of the Tribeca Games Spotlight for upcoming games to look forward to. And that was in 2021. And the group, Rose Engine, spoke about how genuinely excited they were that that Guillermo del Toro is the gentleman who announced their game.
That's really cool.
Yeah. And he was like, you guys should really look forward to this because he's all about horror and monsters. And he talked about it at length. And
cool if he picked it up and made a movie out of it.
Maybe that'd be fun. That would be amazing. That would be genuinely, genuinely amazing. And then a little bit later that year, at the Gamescom 2021, it was announced that it would be first day release on Game Pass.
Mm-hmm. That's how we played it. We played it when it was leaving. That's our habit of Game Pass games, is play them when they're leaving.
Yeah, well, there's nothing wrong with it. I mean, because there's so many games out there. It's really, really difficult to play. And they... The company talks about some of the people that they drew inspiration from, and all that stuff. And as I was like remembering the game, and I read this list. I was like, I can definitely see some of it. It's one of these things, I didn't know what it was, so I clicked on it, of course, and it showed me a picture. But one of the artworks specific is there's a thing called Arnold Böcklin's Isle of the Dead. Mm-hmm. It's a painting. I didn't know what it was, so I clicked on it, and it's like literally a pretty version of the pixelated ending of the game. It's like this dark, foreboding island in a little boat with a white figure, and it's just this black mass coming out of this island, and it was like, oh, that kind of looks just like the ending of the game. So I was like, that was really cool. But then they specifically mentioned three individuals. Well, four. They specifically mentioned the literary influence of The Festival by H.P. Lovecraft, which the game opens with a quote from that short story.
Okay.
And then The King in Yellow by Robert W. Chambers. And you see one of the first things you do when you get into the game is you pick up a copy of The King in Yellow and you read it and you kind of, the game starts.
Yeah.
And but then they said that two other individuals would be Hideki Akiyano and David Lynch to help shape the narrative themes of identity and memory in the game. And Hideki Akiyano is the gentleman behind Evangelion and Shin Godzilla. And
that makes sense.
Yeah, I was kind of like, I saw that and I was like, really? I don't really get that. And then I, as I thought about it, I was like, well, I kind of get it, especially that the final boss fight.
Well, I mean, it's more about the themes, not about what you're fighting.
Yeah, the shattered psyches and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. And but so like I was like, okay, well, some people usually just say, oh, I got inspiration just to say someone's name. But like genuinely looking at these and thinking about the game, like they definitely drew inspiration. And then seeing that painting, I was like, whoa, they really homaged that. And then they talk about the aesthetically they pulled inspiration from the PS5 consoles. And specifically the game includes, which is a kind of a cool feature, it includes a CRT mode, which will mimic the effects of the old red and white and red cords.
CRT filter,
That you can just toggle on in the menus to make it feel more like
a place. I'm sure I clicked on it and clicked it back off. Maybe. Probably. I'm probably always do those little settings. Because it's in so many people, their game makes more sense to have it probably, but so many other people just have it in there because it's retro and cool. I was like, if you don't design your game around it.
Yeah,
because that's why old games look the way they do, because they were designed around that. They don't necessarily, even this game wouldn't have been technically really designed to run on a CRT TV.
Yeah, but I thought that, they drew inspiration, they actually made it to make it where you could do it. So I did think that was cool and worth noting. Trying to make sure. I think that about covers it, other than saying that it was built on the Unity engine.
Yeah, so is Unity, or this seems more like a Unity thing.
Yeah.
Yeah, we talk about the two in Unity and Unreal. This definitely seems like a Unity game. Anything they're working on now, post this?
I didn't see anything, which is kind of sad, but
they could be busy.
Yeah, their websites aren't, like I said, it was just the website, rose-engine.org, and it just had stuff about this, and I wasn't going down the Twitter or Facebook rabbit holes trying to figure out everything, but hopefully they are working on more. Because this just came out in 2020. It's only 2 years later. Maybe they're working on... Oh, I don't think there's a DLC.
You know we're in 2024, right?
Yeah, so I said 2 years.
2020, it's 4 years.
It's 2022.
You said 2020.
It's October 27th, 2022.
Okay, you kept saying 2020.
Oh, my bad. That's me being stupid. It's not less than 2 years old.
Okay, that's not bad.
Yeah, so they're hopefully, fingers crossed, I didn't see anything, but I really hope they do make some more. I've spoken a bunch. What do you remember?
I got nothing to say about the game. Well, obviously, I'll keep harping on it, but the way it looks is like the main thing. I downloaded it immediately, even knowing what kind of game it was. It's a survival horror. You go to a couple different places. You start on one little a ship. I think I wrote called the Penrose, which I guess is actually a ship you start on. You don't end up staying on there. I don't have the memory, of course, remember how you end up changing. To the different locations because you end up in like this little intro part, and then you end up on a bigger, larger, maybe it's another bigger ship or a space station of sorts.
Well, it's the you're on the scout shuttle, the Penrose.
Yeah, that's like not even 30 minutes, 15 minutes.
But then
teaching you how to play.
Yeah, that once that crash lands, because you wake up on that ship, it's already crash landed, and you walk around the ship to figure out what you have. No, you're experiencing a memory. And then you wake up on the ship having crashed. So you're not sure how
different
long.
Different ship have crashed.
Yeah.
Starting messing with memory and stuff like that right away. Now, I ain't going to say I know exactly what happened in this game.
I vaguely do. Because what happens is as you get into it, your main character, Elster,
mm-hmm.
She is a replica. And there are several different types of replica, which are really just cybonic robots, you know, beings.
Cyborgs. Different classes of them,
but they're all based on a specific neural pattern that is downloaded into them, which allows them to be more easily controlled and operated. And, like, as you go through the game and you start reading diaries and stuff like this, because it is recommended that some of the robot neural patterns take, you know, do diary entries. And that way the science officer on the ship, who is a human, can go back and read their diaries and see which ones are suffering from neural link decay and essentially have them recycled and just get a new one and stuff like that. Which, you know, they're already talking about consciousness and are these really, you know, alive beings and so forth. And some of them think that they're alive. And then as you go into it, you start reading some of these diary entries, and then you start reading some of the medical files about all these individuals. They have them all classed. And there's a bunch of different ones. Some of them wrote down just because I thought they were really cool. Your character specifically, named Elster, is an LSTR unit, 512. But her units, they are soldiers. They're built specifically for, you know, guards and security and stuff like that. But then when you read, like, warnings, and like, this game really did great world, but I don't often read texts and stuff.
Yeah.
But I read the first one or two. I was like, oh, these are actually kind of interesting. So I continued to read.
You might have read more than I did.
I read most of them.
Yeah.
But it specifically mentions that your Elster unit were soldiers, and to avoid memory bleeding, do not befriend them. Do not let them listen to music. Do not let them watch movies. Do not talk to them about war, and do not show them pictures. Mm-hmm. Because they're designed to just focus, be a soldier, be a guard. If you do anything else to them, it can cause the neural links to decay and do a memory bleed. And it makes so much other. And then there's a bunch of other ones. You have these ones that were called Yules. Yules love to sing and dance and bring up morale. Their original neural patterns are based on ballet dancers. Mm-hmm. Now, if they are not allowed to sing and dance, the main trigger is if they can't sing or they can't dance at least once a day, they become suicidal. Suicidal or homicidal, depending on. But because their robot brains won't let them commit homicide on certain individuals because of the chain of command in their brain, they more than most often will become suicidal if they can't sing and dance to bring up morale.
Wow, that's programmed into them.
They're meant to sing and dance and bring up morale and make everyone happy. But if they're not allowed to do that for whatever reason, their brain doesn't know how to function. And it just ceases to...
That's weird.
And then that's, you know, part of... when you have a single personality that's been cloned thousands upon thousands of times.
Oh, yes.
And then, like, there's all these things, but there are commanding officers. These people called Gesalts. Mm-hmm. And they are human. And they are specifically, like, all the replicas are imprinted on them. Like, this is the first human that they see, and they, you know, just like, you know, people know what imprinting is when it comes to, like, animals and stuff like that. That way they are to defend and only accept orders from this individual and so on and so forth. And it's this crazy whole thing, because then on top of all that, then there's the whole world-building aspect, that the reason they have to use this because it's a small country who revolted against a larger nation and have been trying to fight for freedom, and they've been fighting for freedom for, like, 50 or 100 years or something like that. And there's all that stuff that has nothing to do with the actual story that's going on. It's just the world building,
yeah.
Of how these individuals are on this godforsaken rock in the middle of nowhere because they're exploring, trying to find territory to colonize, basically. And it's bonkers. Like, this, if you were lost in that, it's cool. I genuinely, like, I would love to see a TV show or something. I think it'd be pretty cool. Something that kind of takes place. Don't have to follow our main character, but you could use the world and build some really cool stories. Guillermo del Toro, please get on it. I would watch the heck out of it.
At least produce it or something.
Mm-hmm. That being said, Like I said, I really dug the world, but then when it comes to some of the gameplay elements, it is very reminiscent. Very reminiscent of like classic Resident Evil.
Yeah, there's a lot of, you have your map, of course. I don't know what the map looks like, but apparently I wrote good map in my notes.
Yeah, it's very, it's like,
very detailed.
It's detailed pixelated, but like if you're in this square, you're in this square and it's named and so on and so forth. And you can if you can't go somewhere, it specifically tells you, as long as you interacted with the door, it tells you what doors are broken, what doors you can go into, what doors need a key and what key it needs. So that way you can pull your map and be like, I need a star key to go on that map.
I write down, this is a game full of keys. Oh, everything you're doing is, everything you're doing is to get another key to another door.
Oh, full of, like right here, literally my second sentence in my notes here says, key after key, after two broken keys I had to take to a smelter to get merged into another key. And then I have another one note down here. I literally put a key into a painting to open a secret compartment that contained another key that I put into a plate that opened up and had another key inside. I mean, they were really about some keys.
It was about,
which is like classic RE.
Just puzzles leading to an item to open another door, at least another puzzle to get an item that opens another door. It is classic Resident Evil stuff. That's a lot of what this is. Not exactly our cup of tea. We had I'm not sure if we followed a TA guy. We have some sort of guide for this to help us get through this. I like guides for stuff like this because we have a limited inventory slots. Six slots. So knowing what to be carrying when you're going somewhere is better to me than like going somewhere, putting stuff away, getting to a place that I need one of the items and having to run. But this game, it would normally expect you to just run back and forth across the map 10,000 times like you do in Resident Evil. Because when you don't know where you're going or if you're playing the first time and you need certain items to get through certain doors or certain keys, I guess I should say. So thankfully we had a guide of some sort. I remember having a guide of some sort that was telling us, drop off this, pick up this, and then run across here to open this. And that's kind of how we would have played it. I never played a game like this blind. I would never play, like when we played Resident Evil 2 Remake, I wasn't playing that blind because I don't want to run around aimlessly not knowing what item I need.
Or holding on to an item that I think I'll have to use again, but it was a one-time use item and you don't know.
Yeah, at least Resident Evil 2 would tell you.
Yeah.
Remake would tell you. This would not, as far as I know. You would just tell you to put it back in the box and leave it alone, because you do have save rooms, and it has a storage box, whatever.
Mm-hmm. So if you like old school Resident Evil, you'll love this game because it plays very much like it,
except for not the tank controls.
No, much more fluid,
more modern controls,
and easier to maneuver. And as you're running through, you are encountering essentially zombies. They're corrupted versions of replicas who have been infected. Either they've broken mentally, or something, they call them corrupted because they've been infected with some sort of virus. Because they've been locked on this base for God knows how long. Because time gets weird when you're a robot that's not affected by time and doesn't need to worry about it.
Yeah. I did write next to the first save room, if you hit continue without saving, remember the screen flashes red and it says the words come across the screen, you'll regret this later.
Oh yeah, if you don't, if you back out of not saving.
Ominous. But you always save, and you can save, and then you can go, if you accidentally go back in there and hit continue without saving, it pops up every time.
I did think that was a really fun thing.
You do eventually get, of course, we'll go over a couple of the weapons. You do get your pistol, of course, because every game with this guy has a pistol.
Oh yeah.
I remember kind of liking the somewhat, it's like a, not time, like a, the targeting thing, because you're so laser sighted and you want to go for like the headshots, but you have to wait. You can aim in that direction and shoot. I think maybe even Resident Evil 2 or some game like that had a thing like this where you aim for the head, but if you shoot right away, you have a chance. But if you like wait a second, then it's a little square that focuses, and usually most things move pretty slow. I mean, there's a lot of tight hallways and stuff like that, but most things move slow enough with your pistol that you can wait and kill things. You end up using the pistol, and then eventually the shotgun, we'll mention in a minute. A lot of that, you'll get the shotgun, the two things you use the most. Again, it was relying on the guy because there's more powerful weapons, but they're a waste, obviously. I mean, it's like anything, like Resident Evil, if you get like a flamethrower or a rocket launcher, you're not going to, unless you're just playing around, you're not going to blow up a zombie with a rocket launcher. No. You're going to save it for a boss.
Yeah, for specific bosses and stuff like that. Because there's a total of 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. There were 7 weapons in the game.
Yeah.
Do you remember what they all were? Do you have them right
now? I have them, you know, all through on my mess here. But all my notes and stuff. But you can do it. Like there's like a lot of avoiding, too. Mm-hmm. A lot of times you don't bother. Because I think things come back to life.
You can
shove things out of the way, which I think... it's the most recent thing we played, but like Resident Evil 2, I could have used a bit of a shove button, maybe.
Just a shove, man.
Just a little shove button, just to get out of my way, you know. Instead of taking a bite for no reason, just kind of give the zombie, zip the zombie a little shove, you know.
She can do it. It's just a kick. Well, she's also a robot.
Yeah.
But so there were good weapons, and definitely when it comes to bosses, like you talk about, like, you know, survival horror games and, you know, Resident Evil and stuff like that. There's only 3 actual bosses in the entire game.
That's kind of normal for a game of this length. I mean,
there was. Do you remember them at all?
No, I don't remember anything. That's why I have notes. My first one would be the Mina.
Yeah, Mina boss. Or Mina, however you want to pronounce it. I think it's Mina because she's a mining robot. I think it's Mina.
It's not spelled. It's not spelled like mining though.
Mynah though. Mina.
I guess.
But yeah, she literally has a giant mining laser, and she's just a juggernaut of a thing that's just either blasting the laser beam or she's charging you, and she has a bunch of health. And she's her description is the first boss fight in the game, occurring only after you have gathered all the keys for the hospital wing.
Yeah, God, there's a bunch of that stuff that's in here too.
Mm-hmm. And she is just a
mention. Obviously, just like you have to say, more for like Resident Evil type stuff is you get these items you combine to make better versions of healing items. That, of course.
Mm-hmm.
Hear the radio. Use it tuning into certain stations to get codes. I think it also has something to do with enemies sometimes, too.
Certain enemies you could... there's
all those new enemy types that get screwed up. You actually hurt them with the radio frequencies.
Yeah,
that was kind of unique.
Those ones suck because what they do is because they're sending out a radio frequency, it messes up your aim. And so you can't aim at the enemies. But usually when you walk in those rooms, I remember one specifically, it's a completely dark room, and it was filled with like 5 enemies and one of the crazy frequency things just, you know, wiggling in the corner. And it was lit up, but the rest of the room was dark because it was like beside a flashing computer. Yeah. So you had like literally, according to the guide, the strategy was walk in the room, do not take any steps. Walk into the room, immediately pull out your radio and start toggling the frequency to kill that thing, because you take a step in there in the darkness, you can't do anything because the enemies just start bombarding you, and it's like it's a death room
if you don't know what you're doing. Yeah, turn the radio on instead. It's a cool mechanic. It's only done what, 3 or 4 times, maybe
3 or 4 times. The whole game. It's pretty those things, but they're usually big rooms like that, or like big or like central points where enemies can follow you too, and you can kind of like ring around or figure eight and get out through.
Yeah. It looks like enemies do come back to life sometimes, so because we have thermite flares as used to permanently kill enemies, kind of like when you use a lighter to burn zombies.
Yeah.
Which I don't think they bring that back in later Resident Evils.
Because like, I remember the guy specifically saying, hey, you can use a flare on this guy because this one doesn't come back. And another one saying, don't bother because this enemy does regen.
Mm-hmm.
So that was pretty cool. So it's only certain enemies. I guess it's the areas that you frequent most. That has a lot of pass through, but hallways and stuff that you only go to like once or twice. It's like, yeah, just kill all the enemies in the hallway because it'll make every trip here faster in the future, because it'll give you a safe run to a save room or to a heal room or something like that. Because they did have recharge stations, but they were limited to like how number of uses it could do.
I remember those.
I think it was like because I remember being in the hospital wing and there's a few others. It was a recharge station that had like 2 uses, and you could heal yourself without using healing items.
Mm-hmm.
And there are specific treks. He was like, now go back to that healing station that I mentioned, and that way you didn't waste your healing items and stuff.
Hmm. We were waiting for that first boss. I'm guessing it probably looked cool.
Okay, there was really cool like cutscenes.
Well, the boss did, but I think when you're fighting her, I must have wrote it. I should have watched the video again around me. I wrote, you shoot her when she leans over and blood pours from her helmet.
Oh, yeah.
It must have looked really cool.
When you damage her, she was like,
and just like, blow it from her. And right after that, you meet, we're going to do all the story, because the story is really confusing, and I don't remember it anyway, but here's where the first, like, really confusing, because you've been seeing a couple of these first person sequences where you actually walk around in first person, but it's not like in the modern present. You're in a different time.
Yeah.
Walking through first, and they usually just walk and you end up in a, like somebody talking about something. I think one was in a school.
It was like other ones. It was like her her first command, or her Gesalt's first command in her being. She was like a, you know, like I said, she's a commanding officer with the Gesalt's, and you know them forming a relationship. Essentially, it's a love story. She's trying to find her. Is it a love story if she's programmed to be in love with this thing and try to find it?
I have no idea.
So it's, but that's what her story is.
But after we get to one of these scenes where you meet this other guy named Adler, which I guess he's kind of like one of the bad guys, I guess. I don't remember him necessarily, but there's this part where she shows him a picture from the beginning of the game, because you were carrying on a picture from the beginning of the game.
It's her picture.
Her picture.
It's her name's RNA Young.
Like that, yeah. And all he says, you shouldn't have come back here, and pushes you down an elevator shaft. And then you black out, and you have a flashback sequence, first person flashback sequence. And then when you wake up, you're in an elevator full of bodies. Like, hey, I guess he's done this. This is really the first time you're thinking, like, is this rope, you know, is this Ulster, is she who she thinks she is? Or like, how many times has he ran into this thing and pushed her down this elevator?
The exact same elevator
full of bodies. It's so that's like the first real time you're like, I don't know what's going on really here. So we're not going to deep dive into that because I don't remember enough anyway, but I do remember the elevator shaft full of bodies.
Yes. And the that probably, that's like near the beginning, but then as you progress further and down like the mine shafts and stuff, you get to a place called the Nowhere, which is like underneath that base, and there's like where like there's more stuff going on. And then that's where some of the like, I don't know, cosmic horror or body horror stuff starts kind of going on. Because do you remember the next boss?
You're jumping so far ahead of a lot of things when I'm scrolling through here.
Okay, well, you go first.
I mean, it don't really matter. We're not tracking the whole game. Did you mention the rooms that are dark?
I mentioned
the dark rooms. You can't do anything. Like, see, most of the game is lit. But there's rooms you can't even, don't have lights on, which is pretty can be common in horror games. But you literally can't open doors in, like when you go into a dark room. If you try to go into the room, you can't open any doors. You can't pick up any items because it's too dark. It won't let you. You have to eventually get this flashlight module, and it's the freaking thing takes up one of your inventory slots.
Yeah, it does.
Just so you could have it to go into dark rooms. So that's one of the things you'd be like having a guide to be like, pick up the flashlight module. Go to this dark room, in this dark room, grab all the stuff. What you got to do, run back to your thing, put the flashlight module away.
Yeah, because he did say that. He's like, you won't need your flashlight for the next part. And yeah. I'll let you, you know. That guy was really well done. That TA guy was, from what I remember.
The gun, I don't remember using, revolver.
I'm sure they're powerful. It's like the Magnum and the Desert Eagle and stuff like that. I would save, saved it for, it was a boss weapon only.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't fire it once. Except for during one of the boss fights, where it's like, "Hey, take your two big weapons and uncork on this mofo," and stuff like that. What's your next thing?
There's all kinds of stuff. Another weapon, of course. There's actually kind of a neat thing. Do you remember the monofilament fiber wire areas, like the mazes that are?
Wire. There's like a razor.
Apparently, I wrote the flashlight lets you see the wires
because it'll glint it.
Glint it. You can move through the areas with that.
That was probably cool. I do remember that.
Yeah. I think here I wrote, jump into fleshy hole. This must have been where everything started getting squishy and gross.
Probably, probably going down towards where the nowhere stuff is. And then speaking of gross things, there's a spot right here. Hold on. Okay, this is a thing from the long range survey mission report. Salvaging replica, basically it's advising against cannibalism of the replicas, and this is a quote from the book. Say, long range survey mission, salvaging replica technicians for sustenance is not recommended. Even in extreme circumstances, it may look and taste like ordinary flesh, but is bioengineered tissue and may cause more harm than good. Oxidants that may look like blood are indigestible. Please do not try to eat them.
God.
Which it says, don't drink their blood. You can eat their flesh, but it is poisonous. And like, that's insane. That I guess they had to go in some ridiculous mission reports, and you know, because some of these were like one way trips. If you didn't find anything, they only lost one human, and you know, 100 replicas, but they can make more replicas. And what's one human life during this war that they were doing? So that was they were in it. So I'm deleting that. What's your next thing? Do you suggest another weapon?
Well, the flare gun, which I think was actually a gun that had some of the most limited ammo, I think, because it literally burns things. Like, it's the one thing you can shoot something and it would light them on fire and then would actually kill. So you had to waste thermite, mm-hmm. But I think I remember being very limited flare guns.
Yeah.
Ammo at all. Do you have anything for the Chimera boss?
Yes, that is the, hold on, I got to pull that picture up. Yes, the Chimera boss. It appears within the nowhere, and it fights you after jumping down a hole.
Mm-hmm. The fleshy hole.
The fleshy hole, yes. And this is where, like I said, the game gets a little more gross, because the Chimera is an amalgamation of a bunch of reused replica parts.
That's probably why they use the Chimera name.
Yeah. It's a bunch of reused replica parts thrown together and then have been corrupted and experimented on to try to make additional versions of themselves, and it doesn't go well. It's a pretty cool little creature too. It's got like these like spider legs, and it's a cage on top that's just got a fleshy mass in the middle. It's got like one glowy eye, and it's got a bunch of these arms that are reaching out of the cage, and it's pretty gross looking. But that's also a fight you can't win on your own.
Yeah, you just kind of shoot and survive until the other character you've met finishes off with that big rifle.
Mm-hmm. And she fires it like two or three times.
Yeah.
I think you do have to damage it. Well, yeah. I think you have to
shoot it,
damage it and stuff like that. It's like a weird timer versus damage thing, but you can't win it on your own. You have to run around and shoot. And that's one of those things. It's got like these four pillars. You kind of figure it between the pillars, but it will tackle and break the pillars, and you get less and less stuff. Very similar to the Myrna fight, where you had the figure eight thing, and she would blast the pillars, and you had less and less cover. Mm-hmm. It's a staple in a lot of games.
Something big breaking something.
Yeah, people have seen similar boss fights in mm-hmm. millions of games. It says that it does. I'm reading right here to double check my notes. It is impossible for the player to kill it by conventional means. It must be killed by the characters by shooting it. It says yes, it has it literally has over 900 HP, which is more damage than you have ammo in the game.
Yeah, that's fine. I mean,
yeah.
And you do get that gun though.
Yeah, you do.
After the fight,
you do get the rifle, and that you get to use that later on.
Mm-hmm.
It's a really powerful rifle, but again, really just for the next boss, which is just the final boss. Everything else throughout the game is stuff that you can merc with your standard pistol.
So during all this time of playing, you've been collecting these like metal, they're called plates. They all have like named plates.
It's like Serenity
plates. They are just like keys to complete this puzzle thing. Mm. And I wrote you get all the plates, open the big door. Lots of sequences here that I didn't understand that lead to the quote unquote fail ending, which is what you have to do apparently to move forward.
Yeah.
Obviously, I didn't know what was going on then. I sure as hell don't know what's happening now.
Yeah.
Do you remember anything about the getting to the sequence and getting to the weird? Because I did right after that, it changes the title. Like, you go back to the title screen and the title screen's all different.
And it's like reading like that you failed and stuff like that.
And it says begin, the word continue, because you played multiple times, you're normally continuing. It now says begin instead of continue.
Mm.
So it's kind of, yeah. You have a game every now and then that'll do a sequence that like leads you back to the title screen to do something else. This is one of those times.
And there was...
But when you hit it again, you're not... Like, you're doing a different part. Like, it's yeah. really, really strange.
It's really, it's kind of turning everything on its head and stuff like that. And then I think after that part, is that the part you fall down and you're broken? And you have to...
Maybe.
Because there's this part.
It says, I wrote, you're back on the Penrose, which I think is the ship from the beginning. That's
the ship from the very beginning.
Everything looks new again.
Yeah, because you're like reliving your...
I guess, who knows? And then you take some stuff from another dead unit. Which is probably, maybe you are a damage unit. You take a piece from another unit, another Elster unit,
mm-hmm.
and jump into another flesh pit.
Yeah, right here. Because you have now, from what I can tell, you're now on a different planet, the planet Rotfront. And it says right here, you repaired yourself with corpse parts. So something happened and you're...
Who knows if you're the same person at this point?
Yeah, I think you are. I think you're still Elster. Elister, because she's different. And as the story goes on, you find out as you're hunting for your commanding officer, RNA, and then the more you go into it, you find out that RNA broke rules, and she actually formed a relationship with you. Y'all were lovers.
Not supposed to do that.
Yeah, but it didn't break you. It made you a different, unique thing, which is not supposed to do based off all the other research and stuff. But you're hunting. It's a love story, and you're hunting, you know, for her. But you spend most of the game thinking that you are hunting her just because your programming says you are. And like right here, it starts to reveal, you know, that there's more to you, and it's, you're a unique thing, and it's kind of cool. And then there is, I think, once down that pit, there's a character that helped you in the Chimera fight. Her name was Issa. And during here, this is where, like, from this point on, you get the Evangelion vibes. Because she says something to you. She's like, thank you or bye. And she just explodes and dissolves into black goo.
Yeah, I actually wrote run into Issa who dissolves? Weird.
Yeah, she just turns into a pool of black goo. Because now everything around you is...
Yeah, you're in a place, you're moving to a place that's called the Rot Front.
Yeah, and everything's just pulsating fleshy mass. Yeah. It's really gross and undulating. And those terms, I don't like the undulating fleshy mass. I don't like those. And that's like I said, like definitely some Evangelion vibes. And there's also a part, I think right there is another room. I have a puzzle, I specifically wrote it down. It's a butterfly room, and the patterns of the wings of the butterflies are like what you have to use. It's like, oh, there's 6 orange butterflies and 2 blue butterflies, and you have to use the number of butterflies to tweak the combination lock to get into whatever thing you're doing next. And then I think once you're down in the Rot Front, I think it's literally just kind of like bing bang boom end game. I don't remember you running
the last area. There's another gun, the submachine gun's down there apparently.
Yeah, I don't remember there being a whole lot down there, because I think it's just building up towards your final fight against Falk.
Yeah. I don't remember who Falk is.
Falk is a... I have it wrote down. Hold on. Oop, don't want to delete that. I have it right here what a Falk unit is. Adler. Okay, Falk units are commanding officers. They are combat and counterpart to the Adler units. They have bulletproof armor, and they resemble the nation's leader and their daughter.
Weird.
They're just like a combined amalgamation, but they are the combat commander. So they're what your Lester should be answering to, but she's different because of the Gestalt taking an interest in her. Because, like I said, the Adler units are the administrative. They have all the do all the paperwork, and they check all the stuff. They're the counterpoint to the Falk units, and it says that the Adlers are best left alone and to their own devices, so they can take care of stuff that needs to be, which was weird, because other ones needed constant monitoring, while these ones worked better as long as you didn't mess up their what they were doing. Like some super hyper ADHD people, not ADHD, but OCD people, they worked perfectly fine as long as you didn't interfere with them. And I do have a note here that for the Myrnas, the Minas, rather. Mina units are stable and require very little to be happy. Though, diary keeping for them is not mandatory because of how little it takes to make them happy.
A lot in the reading, I guess. Because a lot of that, other than that, is you kind of, I don't want to say wandering around aimlessly, but a lot of the game itself, if you're not reading everything, is really just wandering from place to place, getting a key to open the next door to go to the next place. That's really kind of why we're blazing over is the gist of the gameplay. Is, I mean, you run from rooms, you shoot some monsters and run to the next room and pick up items and ammo and, you know, and move on to the next thing, solve a puzzle, open a door.
But even the stuff I'm reading is just world building. You're not really sure what's going on a lot of the time, which is still pretty cool, which also does allow for multiple playthroughs.
We'll get to that. There are multiple endings, obviously, of course. Yeah. Even the sort of misleading fail ending, which is just a continuing of the story anyway. I'm guessing we got the same ending, but we'll get to that in a second. Do you have any? Do you remember the Falk final boss?
Yes.
How to fight. I wrote six phases, which is a lot, but I wrote, but surprisingly easy. I used a mix of the revolver and the submachine gun. And then when she dropped, when you do enough damage, she'll drop down. And she has these like floaty spear things, and you stab her with her own spears.
You literally like grab this because she like powers down, like lands on her knees, and the spears kind of like stick in the ground in front of her, and you just take one up and stab her with it.
I think you got to grab one. I think she throws them at you, and you have to pick them up from inventory, and yes, then like run true. Up to her. When she drops from enough gunfire, she drops and you stab her to it multiple. I forget why there's six phases of this,
because she has six spears that float around her, and each spear as you're going through. Again, that is with the spears and spear throwing and impaling of the spears. Very, again, more of the Evangelion, like with the whatever that spear was called, that lance of whatever.
Yeah.
It's been a minute since I've watched Evangelion, but y'all know what I'm talking about. That Bident. It was
whatever. I don't remember having any trouble. I think I beat it first and told you the boss has multiple phases.
And you were like, ugh. I remember dying on it like once, just because I was like, what do I do? I didn't feel
it's not very clear, but you have to. It's the first time you have to pick up something that the enemy throws at you and use it back on them again. So it's kind of, if you don't know that's how you're doing it, or how to quickly enough get up to grab one of the spears.
Yeah, because right here, because even then, once the ending happens, it gets really wonky.
Yeah, you're watching all, it's just a bunch of scenes and stuff that you don't really, I mean, if you haven't been fully paying attention, I mean, you read all the stuff, you think you've been reading all the stuff.
Even paying, reading all the stuff, 100%
I was like, paying attention, I don't remember having any clue what was going on.
Yeah, but I do remember there being, because it was really cool because they specifically mention it and they really go out of their way to make sure that they're, references are included, is like a lot of this final scene is very similar to the last two episodes of the Evangelion anime, because there's a spot that it made me laugh, because as you're getting blasted with these like a bunch of these images, it comes to a blank white sheet of paper, and in the middle it says violent scene missing, this space is intentionally left blank, please continue. And it like flashes across your screen for a solid 2 or 3 seconds, so you know, long enough for you to read it, and then it keeps going, and you're like, "What? What?" It's like they did that obviously for the effect, and I also wonder if they're like, "Let's save some money and just throw that screen up there."
I'm sure it was an artistic choice,
100% intentional, considering what they were referencing.
Mm-hmm.
But then after all that, then it comes to like a final cutscene where you're speaking to Adler. Which is a guy he's the guy who kicked you down pushed you down the elevator.
Mm-hmm. I forget his relevance to everything.
His relevance is Adlers are the connection point between, they don't answer, no one speaks to them and they don't do anything. The only person they speak with is the Gestalt, and they're the person that's the in-between from the Gestalts and their higher-ups. So he's technically the highest ranking officer on board, but he's not supposed to interfere with anything unless it's absolute
middle management.
Yeah, basically. He's the communication point to keep the other people from being bombarded. But then right here is where it gets really wonky.
A lot of stuff's been wonky. I mean, we blaze over it. I remember if in a scene of two people just talking to each other, everything else is like weird memory stuff. And like, because you see a lot of those, I mentioned that first person memory sequence, you have a handful of those throughout the game, and they're not random, but they're placed in specific spots for a reason.
Mm-hmm.
And unless you have read all the reading, I guess maybe you know what these sequences are for. There's a bunch of those, though, a bunch of those first person walking through a place, one on the beach, one on a train, the one in the school, and stuff like that. You see a couple of these throughout the game.
Yeah, because right here, right here is like with the ending with Adler, because I think you can kill Adler here.
I don't know if you can do anything at this point. You're just watching the scenes, ain't you?
Yeah, kind of. I think what blazes out is you're standing in front of Adler, and the only thing he says to you is he calls you a selfish monster. And then I think you kill him. You push him off this cliff, and he dies. And then you find his diary. And right here is an entry, because he's been keeping track. He's been making notes and entries and stuff just so for the passage of time. And the passage of time has been weird for the entire game anyway.
Yeah.
But this is a quote from his journal. It says right here, Adler, 3,000 cycles is nearing the shelf life of a replica. If you have not found a suitable world by now, you will not, and we are not coming to help you. That was like a last mission report that was given to him from higher up. Mm-hmm. That they're essentially, they're abandoning you because you haven't found anything. You're one of the doomed ships. And it says right here that 3,000 cycles is nearing the shelf life of a replica. If you have not found a suitable world by now, you will not, and we will not send help. And that diary entry was dated, it's got some question marks, but it says cycle 54 dot, 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 circle, circle. So you've at least almost doubled your shelf life of the replicas. That's why everything's going and falling apart, because it's not meant to have been alive and around for that long. And so that's what's causing everything, really. The chimeras and the constant, it's him trying to keep you alive because y'all have been abandoned, but he's not willing to give up his mission. He wants to come back. His messed up thing is he still wants to come back a hero and find a suitable world to be inhabited. And so it's all like, whoa, what? And then you're also very confused because you're hunting for Arne, who is a human being. She had no way she's lived for 1,000 cycles.
Yeah, no way.
And so you're doomed to failure anyway, which makes it all the more sad.
Yeah. Well, maybe. I mean, there's an additional. We got whatever ending I got, and then there's like a secret. I guess I wrote down the ending because it tells you the name of the, because the other one was called the fail ending, whatever it was. I got something called the memory ending, I guess. I wrote maybe default ending ? For just playing the game regularly. Mm-hmm. I don't know what. I remember reading a little bit about it when I was playing it, about what there's got to be certain things. Because you can't get the there's a secret additional ending that you can't do on the initial, you cannot even do on the initial playthrough, which is why we didn't get all the achievements and stuff, because it actually involves you playing through the whole game again to get a separate ending, because there's some new stuff hidden on a continued playthrough I don't even know if it's New Game Plus, but there's a secret ending which may explain more stuff, but I didn't care enough to do all that.
Yeah, do you want me to? Because I have a list of all the endings here.
You can tell us about it. Okay. I'm not playing the game again.
It says a lot of these are tied directly to your actions.
What actions, though?
It says right here, one of these is called the leave ending. The player must be conservative with ammunition, heal frequently, and spend a long time exploring. In this ending, Elistir cannot work up the courage to see RNA in her, what do you call it? A hyperbolic time chamber,
a med pod.
Yeah, I can't think of the word. I heard the stasis pod.
There you go.
And so instead, leaves the ship and succumbs to her wounds in the wasteland and dies. Then in the memory ending, the player must utilize a balanced playstyle. Elistir awakens RNA, but she does not remember who Elistir is nor their promise. Elistir still stays by RNA's side and succumbs to her wounds. And then you have the promise ending, which requires the player to play aggressively, killing numerous enemies, dealing frequent amounts of damage, and spending a long time in-game. Elistir awakens RNA, who remembers her, and asks her to keep their promise. Elistir reluctantly kills RNA before succumbing to her own wounds. And then the secret ending, the artifact ending, after acquiring 3 hidden keys throughout the playthrough that are only available in your second playthrough, this unlocks a safe in RNA's room, which yields a vase of white lilies and allows Elistir to perform an esoteric ritual, which results in her apparent death. And the following scene is of her and RNA dancing in the wreckage of the ship. So everything is all a sad, happy ending, but it's all sad.
God, I didn't bother. Well, obviously, I wasn't going to bother playing through the game twice to see a different ending.
Yeah, but they're all sad. it's not a happy ending.
Yeah, I remember like my game time was 11 hours, 9 of the 13 achievements, but we didn't get all the achievements because there's either I wrote dying difficulty and secret ending achievements. I guess there's a higher difficulty achievement, a no dying or dying a bunch of times achievement, and then of course secret ending achievement. I wasn't playing, like, because I'm not playing the whole game twice to see a secret ending.
No way I got the secret ending.
You didn't play it twice.
No, but I got 10 of the 13 achievements.
You might have done the, I think it must have been the dying one. I think you can go somewhere and die multiple, you got to die multiple times.
The 3 achievements I'm missing are dying 16 times, beating the game on the hardest difficulty, and then getting the achievement for all the achievements.
I don't know.
Because I'm looking at them right here. Because you got fail, gift, Remembering the promise, and what's this one? Having died one time, expire. And another cool thing is all the achievements are in German. All the achievements titles are German.
Yeah. I remember being German writing mixed out through the game. It had kind of a German feel to all the stuff.
Because it's a German company.
German company makes sense, yeah.
Because I do have this achievement called Remembering Our Promise. It's the story-related ending into post-credits will result in a screen that will pop there. Side note, the game has 4 endings. This is only... Oh, so I did... I got the promise ending, apparently. I don't know how I did. I don't know what the difference between yours and mine... What's promise is... You played aggressively.
That's where she shot her, you said?
Yeah, so I played aggressively, killed numerous enemies, and...
See, I might have done more avoiding than you from my Resident Evil experience.
Maybe. Because, my game time is 14 hours and 47 minutes. So maybe a little bit of time and some extra killing gave me that ending, because I got the promise ending.
What's wrong with that? I don't like multiple endings to video games.
Not really.
I never liked it. I mean, some people love it, and it's like the biggest. It's the selling
point. That depends on what you're playing with, like the choices and stuff. But then you all fall back on the illusion of choice, and the biggest letdown in gaming history is the ending to Mass Effect 3. Mm-hmm. You know, where all they did was change the
color,
the saturated light for the ending, but it was the same ending playing out. You had either blue, green, red, blue, or green. But I overall did enjoy Signalis. Now, yeah. I don't, again, would not have played it without a guide. I don't play a survival horror game without a guide. You know, for Resident Evil, because I'm not holding on to an item for the entire game and realizing you don't need it. Or making multiple trips back to to my safe, my item box or whatever. Because I'm like, oh, I need the spade key. I need the star key. I need I need this key card. The guy did a really good job. He's like, keep this in your inventory. And then he's like, you go through a bunch of doors. He's like, you've now opened all the doors requiring this key. Put it in inventory and forget about it. Mm-hmm. You know, the guy was really good. Did you have a rating?
I do. I have some for some games. Some games I wrote notes for back like forever ago. And some more games recently I don't have any. There's different times. It depends on the game if I wrote notes or not.
Yeah.
Do you have one for this? Like one where a rating doesn't mean anything?
Yeah, I do have a rating that means nothing. Did we go over, or real quick, we went over all the weapons, right?
Yeah, you need to talk about the submachine gun, and the other rifle is like a pretty gigantic freaking rifle. It has a huge kick to it. Use it for like a couple of the, there's these bigger enemies, and the guy says you can kind of waste some ammo on those if you want to get to those quicker, but I think the last boss moves around too much to use the big rifle. That's why it says like revolver in the submachine gun. And
submachine gun to just lay into him, yeah.
Yeah. You spend a lot of the game. I feel like a lot of it would have been using the shotgun. Shotguns are like good in every freaking game.
It was pistol and shotgun, except for when you did the bosses. And my strategy was the same as yours. It was take your revolver, because you had 6 slots. And so it was like take your revolver, take your rifle, or take the submachine gun, and as much ammo. It was like 3 slots of ammo for the submachine gun, 1 slot of ammo for the revolver, because he as the fight goes on, he gets faster and faster. So you start with a revolver and then you move to submachine gun. I think I just kept the submachine gun the whole time because I just had enough ammo to lay into him.
Yeah.
And then you also get a melee. You get a machete. You do get a melee weapon.
You get a stun baton.
Oh, okay.
That's that electric stun baton, which I don't know if it kills or just gets. It's a way to escape from something. I think they grab onto you. It's like an automatic, they call it an automatic escape, because there's also another slot that holds your, one of the best healing item, the auto injector, which actually heals you automatically when you take a fatal hit. Mm-hmm. You just heal instead of dying. Yeah. It's pretty cool.
And so do you want to go ahead and give
I said, we play so many games and we talk about them so far from when we play them, but I do have memory of this was like.
This was almost a year ago. It was like October 2023 for me. Well, is when I got my achievement.
Yeah, so, but I do remember fondly, not remember what was happening in the game, but like the look and the atmosphere and the gameplay was solid. It wasn't ever like, it wasn't hard to whip out a gun and shoot something. Like you had to be strategize and like make sure you have enough distance between you and what you're trying to shoot to get the right shots, stuff like that. So there was nothing really wrong with the gameplay. It's more like wakes up maybe when we played Resident Evil 2 a little bit. Like it's kind of like not something we go chasing down to play like this kind of stuff. But something looks cool, if this was released as a side scroll, we would never even played it.
And yeah, I'm not the biggest fan.
We skip most side scrolling stuff. We see a trailer side scrolling, I don't care. Which is crazy because I've played some really good side scrolling stuff, obviously over the years. Not all side scroll, but it's just like immediately kind of boring when you look at something like that. And you're like, I don't want to do more of this. So we're always looking for something more unique. In general, and also we feel like it's good for the podcast to play more unique stuff like this sometimes. But I remember it fondly. I'm not enough, obviously, to play through it twice. This isn't like my favorite survival horror game of all time is still Dead Space 1. And I played through it. Dead Space 1 is one of maybe two games ever, I said, Blake, that I beat that one in the one night and immediately started the new game. The
only other game I can think of you doing that on was randomly was the Darkness. But I think it was the Darkness 2.
Was it Darkness? I don't remember.
I think it was.
I remember Dead Space because I was the only one I can remember. I actually beat it, and then the night, like literally as I beat credits rolled, I just kept playing. I started right into a new game plus of Dead Space 1.
Because yeah, were you Space. Going for like the one? Was that
eventually?
Was that your first 1K?
I have no freaking clue. No idea. First 1K was probably something dumb.
Something dumb, yeah, like Avatar.
Avatar or something. Burning Earth. Back in the day. But anyway. Do enjoy it. I think it's worth playing. It's worth experiencing. You might get more out of the story too. Like if you do, like Blake does, and do more. Blake doesn't always read stuff either for a lot of games.
Sometimes
if it's remotely interesting, you'll read it.
Sometimes I'll read it if it's like sounds interesting.
Or it depends on how good. They must have been shorter things to read. If it's not like a freaking novel, every time you pick up,
they were like piece of paper, 2 or 3 page diary entries.
Yeah,
not page, but like 2 or 3 paragraph.
Yeah,
and some of them were literally just like 2 or 3 sentences, but. Sometimes I read, because I remember way back in Maze,
that's a long time ago.
Way back in Maze, you told me to, because I think you discovered it near the end of the game.
Oh, yeah, reading all the jokes and stuff.
Reading all the notes, and I read all of them throughout the game, and I told you something.
That was the one that had those dudes arguing through post-it notes.
Passive-aggressive arguments between post-it notes and stuff like that.
Yeah, I missed all that, yeah.
Yeah. But real quick, I said it took me almost 15 hours, but I must have did it over a weekend. Because it says October 19th, 2023 to October 22nd, 2023. Was that 4 days?
Yeah, something like that.
Yeah, 4 days and 15 hours. And okay, so.
Yeah, so overall, I do like it. It's not something I'm never going to play it again, but I think it's worth, I don't know what it costs right now, but I think it's worth dabbling in. Maybe it'll come back around to Game Pass again if you didn't already put it on Game Pass. But I'm going to give it 6 slides down a fleshy pit out of 10. Mm-hmm. It's an okay game, more interesting to look at.
Yeah, if I didn't have a guide, I wouldn't have played it. So because I knew exactly what I was doing, where I was going, I didn't get near as frustrated as I've been doing it solo. So my rating's a little bit higher than Drew's, a little bit. And because I did really enjoy the aesthetic, and I guess
not getting lost would. You kind of raises your like your
yeah.
If you were getting lost and pissed off and running around in circles, you would be more annoyed about.
Oh yeah,
about
but the I was able experience. To play through, you know, gradually, and enjoy myself and told what items I needed, which ones I didn't, and all
that's
crap.
That's how I played Resident Evil 2.
It's I loved it, and getting reading like a lot of the world building diary entries and stuff like that, and seeing what all, because there's a couple of the replicas I didn't even mention, just because. You do kill corrupted versions of every replica, and usually after you've killed one for the first time, a new type, you find a diary entry or a medical report explaining what this unit was and stuff like that. And so it was all this really cool world building, and then it also reminded me of a really underrated sci-fi horror movie that I really love, that I think it should get more love, Pandorum.
Yeah.
Pandorum is a phenomenal movie that it gets overlooked a lot of the time, but it's a phenomenal movie. And because of my kinship for that movie, this had a lot of similarities in certain storytelling aspects. And like I said, I really dug pixel art. This is how pixel art games should be.
Yeah,
this is the apex of
we're the pixel. Age. We're at the different era. People love 8 and 16-bit because of the 80s. We're 90s kids where it was PlayStation 1 stuff looks cool to us.
Yeah, so I did genuinely...
We have a couple of other... Like, it's almost starting to come back. Me and Blake have bought a couple of other games on Xbox, which will be on the podcast eventually, that clearly are using the PlayStation 1 aesthetic on purpose, and it looks like really cool. And it's like interesting seeing people make games that look like PlayStation 1 games. It's kind of cool looking. Same, people sort of almost pulling off stuff that they might people probably wouldn't have pulled off back in the day on a PlayStation.
No.
But now you can use the graphics on a that graphic style on a modern console and get more out of a game. It looks really cool.
This
is kind of an example of that. Like it looks really cool. You know. It looks like a higher budget PlayStation 1 game, but it's a two-person team, which is doable these days.
So I'll leave it with if you like
survival horror at all,
especially classic Resident Evil with severe limited inventory and stuff like that, and you don't always have to kill things. Sometimes it's just give Signalis a chance. Please play Signalis. Wing it. You don't have to, definitely wing it, but if you want to use a guide, nothing wrong using a guide.
We are not going to be no guide chambers here. We use guides for everything.
Yeah. With that being said, because, like I said, I used the guide and wasn't as lost, that did play into it a little bit, but I give it 7 fractured cyborg psyches out of 10. 7 fractured cyborg psyches.
That's pretty cool. Yeah, it's worth playing.
And, randomly too, if you just, I hate the fact that this exists, but if you don't care about the game and you want a free 1,000 gamer score, it does have one of those input screens where you can just type in the achievements to get them unlocked. Because the TA is.
Why didn't we do that? At least after we beat the game.
I don't know. Well, I think you can't. Yeah, I think you can't have any achievements in order to activate it.
Oh.
Because it says right here the TA can take a half hour to an hour to unlock all the achievements on Xbox One, and then when you click on it, it says you can do all this, but if you'd rather play the game normally, here's a guide. And so I think we chose to play it normally because we were really interested in it.
Okay. Do you know what game we're doing on the next episode?
Hold on.
Do you? If you don't, I do.
What is it? The one we were talking about earlier? That.
Yeah. So we have. We're 118. So 119. We have a game. We're waiting to hear back from somebody for episode 120. I won't say anything yet. I need to contact them again to see if we're gonna line up what we want to do for episode 120. But we do have one more game. You know what it is, Blake? Or I can announce it.
You can announce it.
Yeah, it's not like it's a big deal. It's not like anybody ever knows the games we're talking about anyway. But up next for us, if you want to play it,
it's currently on Game Pass, isn't it?
No, it was a Gamefly game.
No, but it's on Game Pass now.
Is it?
It just got added to it. That's why I was talking about maybe I should turn it on and play it. And you were like, oh, I don't know.
Is that? No, I don't know. We're not. No, we're skipping that one.
Oh, okay.
No. My bad. We're doing the sort of cyberpunk 3D action stealth game Foreclosed, which for us, it was a Gamefly game. So I don't know what it costs normally, but should have wrote Gamefly in my notes probably for this. But, another game that we talked about Gamefly before. Our Gamefly is a grab bag of random stuff, so there's a pretty almost guaranteed chance you've never heard of Foreclosed, which is fine because that's what this podcast is about. So if you have heard of it or have played it or see it real cheap and want to play it before the podcast, give it a shot. I remember mostly enjoying it, but we'll talk more about it when we have an episode. If you have played it and want to share your thoughts about it, we always appreciate anybody. We'd love to have people sharing thoughts about our games are so obscure sometimes, but we'd still love to people have to share their thoughts about any of these games they've stumbled into like us. So write to us on any of our social media stuff, and we will share your thoughts along with our thoughts on the podcast. You got anything else, Blake?
No. Please go try to find Foreclosed.
I'm sure if it's unknown like normal games like we talk about, it's probably really cheap. Yeah. So anyway, I want to thank Jared and the guys of Emerge for letting us use the song Letting Go for our intro to our podcast. It's really awesome. Thanks to Mladen Markovic, a.k.a. Devious Pixel, for the art for the podcast. You could check him out on episode, I think, 70 of the podcast. We had an interview with him. We talked about art, video games. Really cool, nice fella. And thanks to Brian, of course, for sticking with us and taking time out of his day from playing video games to edit a podcast of two idiots talking about video games. I know it's time-consuming sometimes, but he's still sticking with it. We appreciate that. That's all I got. We'll catch you in a week or two. Oh, come to the Twitch streams. Me, Blake, and Brian playing Dark Souls 2. It's a good time. After Dark Souls 2, I think we're looking at Exo Primal. It's going to do a little shooty-shooty after a little stabby-stabby.
Nothing wrong with you, a little shooty-shooty after stabby-stabby.
So, well, that's all I got. I'll let Blake say his piece, and we are done here.
Just a, you know, real quick little self-promotion on my part is we have a brother podcast called Suspension of Disbelief, where me and our good buddy Steve, we take turns semi-surprising each other about a movie, and we don't discuss it at all until we record the episode of the podcast, so each other's opinion doesn't influence the other. It grew from this because, you know, friends of the podcast from early on, we used to talk about movies and TV shows and music and stuff like that, but we became more focused just to make it easier on us, honestly. And because we had that other, you know, the movie podcast, and I would love for people to come listen to that. We have one of those coming up here soon.
Yeah, Steve actually picked the classic Casablanca, which we've never seen before.
And he hadn't either. That's why he was wanting. It's one of those, like, you must see movies. And he's like, well, I
never seen it.
You know, time to watch them I'm supposed to have seen.
Yeah.
And so we'll be watching Casablanca over the next week or so, and then we'll be recording that episode.
Yeah, we wouldn't mention it, but if you like, you know, hearing Blake talk about stuff, and he's super, maybe more passionate about movies than he is video games, that podcast has got 48 episodes now. So there's tons of that.
And we talk about all sorts of stuff.
Yeah, and it ain't always just classics like Casablanca. They've done from, like, the first, from, like, movies that just come out to movies that have been around. I mean, it's that thing's all over the map.
I don't know if Casablanca's our oldest, but I think the oldest one we have is, like, 1942, The Double Indemnity.
Casablanca's 40s. We're getting off the weeds here.
But, okay. But please, well, you know, if you like listening to us, please go, you know, listen to me talk about movies. You know, we do deep dives in those and behind-the-scenes stuff and things like that, and talk about actors and...
Yeah, that podcast has now influenced back to this podcast where you're trying to dig a little... It's actually harder for video games than it is for movies to, like, dig into what the people's histories, but you try to do it a little bit in this podcast. Harder in gaming. There's no credit in gaming that they just, like...
Yeah, that's crazy. That's why I talk about the composers, and I do the engine work and stuff like that, and I just try to shed more light on, you know, the unsung heroes, people who deserve it. If they work, you know, you did something cool for the thing, you deserve the credit. And we also have, I have a short story that I self-published on Amazon called They Come This Night.
It's scary.
It can be, yes. It is a survival horror short story. But please, if it's free, if you have Kindle Unlimited. If you don't have Kindle Unlimited, it is just $1. Please go check that out, rate that, review that. Those are the only ones I actually care about getting ratings and reviews on, because that's, you know, it's cool. With that being said, I don't think I have anything else to add. So I want to wish everybody a good evening and good night.